to. Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the at home edition of the Life Changes Show. With tonight's guest, author of Shifting From Role to Soul, Dr. Connie Swire.
Look at the night sky with the stars.
And musical guests, Suzanne King and Gilbert Levy. I am Mark Leisure, and now our host, DMC, the Master of Change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I have been so excited about this show today and our conversation with our guest and the music that we're going to be hearing a little later on in the show. It's all so good. And talk about conversations that matter and music that matters. So I feel like this conversation tonight is one that I have been having, or I used to have, I should say, as a child, because as a child, I just loved older people. I loved listening to what they had to share and what they knew. And though they didn't necessarily relate with me, I just listened in, actually. I used to ask a lot of questions. Not all of them related with me. Some of them did, one-on-one, and it was very special. But I used to sit around the table and listen to older people talk. And it was very exciting to me. And I know I love learning, and I know... But I just, there was respect I had and interest and curiosity. And as I started getting older and I'd continue this practice of hanging around older people and talking to them or listening to them, I started seeing that a lot of the conversations sounded to me like the conversations they were having when I was little. And now I wasn't so little anymore. And I thought, wait a minute, where's the new stuff? Like, what else have you learned since I was hearing these conversations when I was little? And I don't know if I was bold enough to ask, but as I got into young adulthood, I started asking, what's good about getting old to some of these people? And I stopped asking because the answers that would come back were nothing. Like literally, they'd say nothing, and they'd say it all sucks, or it's terrible, or don't get old. It's not fun. And I kind of pushed it a little bit by, you know, but there's got to be something. And I don't, I'm nothing stood out as a conversation that anybody could have with me at the time of something that was happening that was like part of a journey. And then around comes our guest and this book that's just released to this month, actually, The Inner Work of Aging, The Inner Work of Aging. And already I thought, oh, this is different. Shifting from role to soul. And I thought, oh, this is a conversation we want to have. So stay tuned for that. And looking forward to, like I said, our musical guests all on the Life Changes show as well when we come back right after this.
Have you felt inspired to meditate but you just can't? Do you suffer from anxiety but fidget toys just make you more fidgety? Want to replace negative self-talk in your head that keeps bringing you down? Introducing the latest self-help solution, Phi Beads. Transformational beaded jewelry inspired by ancient wisdom, science, math, and psychology. All Phi Beads are designed to incorporate the powerful Fibonacci sequence, nature's mathematical formula that has shaped our existence from the beginning of time. The Fibonacci sequence, also known as the golden mean or the golden ratio, is recognized by our conscious and unconscious mind and resonates as order out of chaos, like we see in plants, flowers, seashells, ocean waves, the pyramids, and in our own body. Not only beautiful, they feel good to wear. Phi Beads can help anchor tranquility, positivity, focus, and structure in your life by doing the Phi Meditation. Phi Meditation helps you harness the power of I Am for intention, affirmation, and manifestation. Affirm the life you want. Get your set of Phi Beads at PhiBeads.com. That's Phi, PHI, Beads.com. You are listening to the Life Changes Show, live from Vortex Dome LA on the BBS Radio Network with your host, the Master of Change, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com, which include luminaries such as comedian Michael Collier, actress Gabriella Wright, performing artist James Hood, and author Ken Honda. Email your comments and questions to info@lifechangesnetwork.com or askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com. You can also comment via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
Well, here we are, ready for some life change. Our guest is an author of lots of books, actually. This one we're going to be talking about more today, The Inner Work of Age, Shifting from Role to Soul. She's a retired therapist, and I love this part. Kudos on her. She says, and is an elder. So welcome, Connie Zweig, to the Life Changes Show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure, and thank you for writing this book. I have to say, I have to say a lot of things, actually. What inspired you to say, hey, this is a process I'm going through, other people need this too? Is it the years of practice you have done and kind of leading you to here?
You know, it's such a mystery where life leads us, you know, and I think the name of your show says it all, Life Changes. So for me, in my late 60s, I noticed that life was changing and I started to feel a kind of disorientation that was unfamiliar to me. I was thinking about retiring from my clinical practice in psychotherapy. And I didn't know what was next. But because I've been doing so much inner work, both psychological and spiritual, the disorientation caught me by surprise. And I began to research in the field of conscious aging, positive aging. And what I found was that there was nobody exploring my expertise, which is unconscious process, or what Carl Jung called the shadow. What is going on in our unconscious as we move into midlife and beyond? And how is that affecting us? How is it sabotaging us? What is it leading us to feel about growing old or to believe about it? So when I saw that that was really a missing piece in the literature, I decided I had one more book to write.
Well, I know when I shared with you that the monologue that I was going to be doing on the show, you said that this was unusual. And I wonder if some of these imprints are happening to us when we're children. So if my experience was unusual, then the usual experience is what? People look down on the elders?
Well, the usual experience, sadly, is that we are swimming in a sea of ageism.
Oh.
And the media is sending us ageist messages. So when I was growing up, I watched all kinds of patronizing, condescending comments and attitudes on television. Mm. And later in the movies, I didn't have a grandparent who was really a positive model of an elder. And so we internalize these negative messages. We may get them in school or church or a synagogue. We now see them in the workplace where people are, you know, fighting against forced retirement. We saw them with COVID and the attitude toward people in nursing homes that was so devaluing. Mm. And so we swim in this sea of ageism and we internalize it. And internalized ageism means that we're carrying with us an internal figure that I call the inner ageist. And that part of us denies the value of age, denies the possibilities, like the older people who said to you, there's nothing good about it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to connect to the promise of this stage of life and all the possibilities and opportunities that we have now, because they've bought into the decline narrative. You know, it's only downhill and that's all that's happening. And this is no longer true. The health span in America is catching up to the lifespan, which is increasing all the time. And so more and more people are healthy in older years, 80s and 90s. And there's so much opportunity for creativity, for emotional development, for changing our relationships, for learning how to be at peace in later life and how to die at peace.
I'm recalling not too long ago, actually, and I wasn't asking that particular question like I was as a child, but I was sharing with somebody about the Life Changes show, and they asked how they could watch it. And I said, it's at www. And they stopped me there and they said, computer? And I said, yes. And they said, hello. And I said, yes. And he said, hello, I'm 70. And I really had no idea what he was talking about. I said, okay. He's like, I don't know anything about computers, so don't talk to me about that. I thought, oh, wow.
Well, I think that, you know, life on tech has left a lot of people behind. And it's really unfortunate. It was a huge learning curve for me to learn social media in order to get the word out about my book.
Mm.
But now that I'm doing it, I'm thriving, communicating with so many people. I actually, the way that I learned it is I hired a high school student across the street and she got me through my click phobia. So I could just click around now without any fear and figure out what's going on. And it's fabulous. But, you know, there are a lot of people who don't have that flexibility or the motivation to get past their fears and to continue learning in this stage of life, regardless of the subject. That's just not their frame of mind. And so part of the message of my new book is how to get through our denial and our fears and our beliefs about this stage of life, which are really holding us back.
Well, okay. Can you give us a one how to? Actually, you just have. I mean, just by being here, and then what you just said, what a beautiful way of connecting with the young as well, and showing them also what a person that they might not have thought was interested is interested in knowing what they have, and because you did that, now you are sharing what your understanding is about this subject matter that isn't enough out there.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of tools and practices in the book, The Inner Work of Age, to help people to become more self-aware, but also more self-accepting, because the inner ageist leads us to feel ashamed and to reject what's happening to our bodies and even to our minds. And so we need guidance to begin to move toward being with what is and accepting ourselves and accepting others. You know, part of what happens with the inner ageist is that we project it onto other older people. In other words, we unconsciously attribute it to other people, and then we perpetuate the ageism of the culture. So I have an 89-year-old friend, and he said to me, I don't want to be with old people. I'm not like them.
Mm.
And I thought to myself, he's really missing out. He doesn't recognize that he's rejecting himself and that he's projecting that or attributing that to other people, and that he's missing out on all the opportunity for friendship with people in his own generation who've had long lives and have, you know, gathered a lot of knowledge and insight. And at the same time, he's perpetuating the ageism of the culture. He's colluding with it. So there are a lot of practices in the book. First, to get beyond that, that for me is the first step. And then there are tools like the life review. How do we review our lives in a way that brings us peace with how they've unfolded?
Mm-hmm.
So that we can learn, where do we need to give and receive forgiveness? What do we need to reclaim that was sacrificed earlier in our lives? Like, maybe it's painting or playing music. And how can we do that now? Or maybe it's a meditation practice that we put down when we were, you know, in our heroic midlife empire building stage. How do we pick that up now and really practice aging in a spiritual way? So there's a lot of guidance for how to do emotional repair, spiritual repair, how to do life completion, so that we can face our mortality and allow it to act on us as a catalyst, you know, as a catalyst, so that we feel the urgency of this time and the preciousness of it. It's so precious.
So what about people that seem to get, well, actually, I recently somebody said, you know, I wasn't always cranky. It's just my age that's made me like this.
Yes. So, you know, I found this in my private practice, that there were people who continued to grow and develop their resilience and their learning and their flexibility. And there were people who got derailed at some point and they became more rigid and even bitter, and they felt regret.
Regret.
Yes.
Yes.
And, you know, it's really sad when you meet people like that. And one of the distinctions that's important to me is the difference between a senior and an elder. So in our culture, we all turn 65 on our Medicare birthday and suddenly we're seniors. But what does it mean to become an elder? That's something totally different.
Yes.
Can an elder be rigid and bitter and feel regret? I don't think so, not from my point of view. An elder implies a kind of self-awareness, a desire to contribute to the common good, a connection to something larger than themselves. You know, these are qualities that take intentional practice, or what I call inner work. And there's no guidance for that in our culture. There's no rites of passage to become an elder, except in indigenous cultures. So I wanted to offer that to people as an opportunity to really explore this stage of life and what it can mean for them.
So when somebody gets to a stage in life where they're considering themselves older, and that can be for old, and that could be different ages, and actually there are people that don't consider themselves old. So it doesn't ever have to happen. If they look back on their life and they realize that they might not have that many years left, and they say, I didn't do this, I never married, or I never, you know, had children, or I never went to school, and I never, and that's not going to happen now. These are the kinds of things that they cannot necessarily change. So how do they reconcile those?
Well, there are some things that we can change and some that we can't, right? There are profound things that we can change at any time, but there are circumstances that we cannot change. So part of the inner work is coming to accept that. Coming to accept that, you know, with the shortened time horizon, there are certain things that I can do now and certain things that I can't. I was just speaking to Stan Grof, who was a very famous psychiatrist in the 60s and 70s, he just got married at 85. So we don't want to say, well, that's not possible anymore, but it's not likely for most people, but we don't want to say it's not possible. So the work for me is to kind of sort out what is really important to you in the context of not dying with regret. So my friend Phil, who I've known for 50 years, has always said he's been writing books to earn a living. And he has always said he can't afford to write this novel that he wants to write. And he'll do it in his 70s. So now he's 73. And he told me, it's time. I'm picking up that story now. And I'm going to write that novel, because if I don't, I'm going to die with regret.
Hmm.
For other people, it's something else. Maybe it's giving forgiveness to someone they hurt. Or maybe it's a creative project that they felt blocked about, that they couldn't complete. And they need to complete that now. Or maybe it's telling someone you love them that you haven't been able to say. But whatever this is for you, now is the time. And the time is precious, because we want to complete our lives with fulfillment. We want to be elders who are fulfilled. And that requires some attention now.
So I'm thinking of how life seems to be structured for the most of us, where you mentioned the 65 and that age marker, but the 16 age marker for some, and the 18 and the 21 and the supposed to's. By this, we're supposed to this, and by that, we're supposed to that. And those supposed to's, if we add them all up, not everybody can necessarily do them. Not everybody is necessarily supposed to do them. But as we get older and that time seems to shrink fast, if we look back and say, oh, I was supposed to do this by then, I was supposed to do this by then, I think if we stay within that same mentality, we might lose what we can be doing right now, which is what you're sharing.
Well, there's some value to a developmental framework, right? There's some value to, you know, during this stage of life, you create a foundation for financial security. And during this stage of life, you have kids, because otherwise you're not going to have kids, or you don't. I mean, I chose not to have kids. Or by the in during this stage of life, you know, you whatever, XYZ. There's value to developmental psychology. But, you know, some of it is a myth. So if we look at the conventional notions about creativity, they tell us that you either peak early in life, you write your masterpiece or you paint your masterpiece before midlife, or you don't. And that's a myth. And when I researched how many famous people, composers and architects and painters, actually worked in late decades, 70s, 80s, and 90s, in creativity, it kind of blew my mind, because that myth that you should do it earlier or not do it was just totally debunked for me when I saw the reality of it.
Wow. I love it. I love it. So, so the book that just came out, congratulations again, and thank you, The Inner Work of Age, Shifting from Role to Soul. Could you help define, and you've done it so far in some elegant ways, but role and soul, what do you mean by that shift?
Well, you know, we identify with our roles. I am a mom. I am a CEO. I'm a salesperson. I am a teacher. I am the shadow expert. That's what people called me. We identify with our roles. What happens when our roles fall away? It could be with retirement or illness. What happens is the disorientation I was feeling thinking about my retirement. So who am I if I'm not the shadow expert or the CEO? Who am I if I'm not the doctor or the nurse or the therapist or the mother or the provider? I've had so many men say to me, who am I if I'm not the provider? And so the book offers this vision of shifting our identity from our doing to our deeper spiritual nature, to who we really are. I'm calling that soul, but you can call it anything you want. You know, you can call it higher self or God within or essence or whatever works for you. But the idea is that this is the time of life when we shift from doing to being, from obligation to flow, from distraction to presence, and from role to soul. And we become who we really are. We drop all the masks and we live in authenticity and the authority of the elder. And it's a beautiful time of life when you have the tools to make this shift.
So as an older person, as you alluded to, that the body may be different, is for sure as we get older in many different ways. What is... if one focused on that, of what one is losing, then we're going down a certain road, right? And you're inviting us to look at the road of what we are gaining.
Well, not exactly.
Oh.
I'm inviting us to look at the whole truth, the whole enchilada. There's loss and gain. There's victory and defeat. You know, there's limitation and possibility. Some doors close and some doors open. And what I'm suggesting is let's not catastrophize it and let's not romanticize it. Let's really look it in the eye, you know, and be with the truth of what it is to age and grow old. The cultural narrative has been about decline, the negative stuff. The positive aging movement came along and it only focused on the positive. And what I'm saying, and this is from my training in depth psychology, is we don't want to split off one or the other. We want to hold them both because that's where the truth is. And aging is very individual. It's very individual, you know, and its influence is shaped by many factors. So we can't make generalizations really about it. We can each reimagine it for ourselves. And so I'm not telling people what to do, like retire or don't retire, volunteer or don't volunteer, believe this or don't believe that. That's not where I'm coming from. I'm offering ways to explore your own chance to reimagine aging for yourself.
Well, I'm liking this conversation so much, not just because I was interested as a child, but at where I am now, as I start to, the sooner we look at this, I think it could be something that also could be taught in grade school. As
yes.
We look, right? As we,
yes.
So let's, okay, then hold on to that thought. Let's talk about that when we come back. We are talking with Dr. Connie Zweig and her latest book, The Inner Work of Age, Shifting from Role to Soul. It's available where books are sold online and some bookstores. I love that. Go to her website, Connie Zweig. I will spell that out. Connie, Z like zebra, W, EIG.com, ConnieZweig.com. She's also available on LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook, and good for you. You're inspiring. I appreciate that. And I love how you learned that. And I can't wait to learn more from our guests. In our next segment, we also have our Ask Dorothy segment right after that. And then after that, our musical guest segment with our musical guests, Suzanne Tang and Gilbert Levy, all on the Life Changes Show at Home Edition right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and the little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show, live from Vortex Dome LA, with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online at lifechangesshow.com, via Twitter at Life Changes Show, and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We are back. I am Filippo Voltaggio. This is The Life Changes Show at Home Edition, and we've been talking to and continue to talk with, for at least a few more minutes, our guest, Dr. ConnieZweig, and she has just released a book, The Inner Work of Age, Shifting from Role to Soul. And so a very interesting question, comment came up just before we went on the quick break. So I should say that I grew up, Dr. Connie, with our grandmother who lived with us. And I remember as kids, my younger brother used to play with, we all played with my grandmother. She played with us. It was lovely. And I wouldn't trade it. But I do remember that my little brother was that much younger. She had gotten that much older. And then when she'd get tired, he wasn't, so he'd keep going. And so at around 88 or 89, she started saying something like, "Stop it. If you treat me like this now, how are you going to treat me when I'm old?" And it wasn't lost on us that she didn't see herself as old at 88 or 89. As a matter of fact, she lived to be a month shy of 100 years old, and she was as active as can be up until the last year, interested and curious in our lives.
So you had a really precious experience, which allowed you to be positively curious about this stage of life. Because it countered, that experience with her countered the cultural ageism. Many people don't have that. I did not have that. I didn't have a positive experience of a grandmother. So one of the things I'm doing now, and in fact did yesterday, is spending time with my 10-year-old grandson and modeling for him what it looks like to thrive in your 70s.
Mm.
So he's excited about the new book. He's talking to me about how to write books. His household is quite chaotic. So one of the things I do when I'm with him is I sit next to him very still and I let him feel the calm and I let him take that in from my body.
Hmm.
Sometimes I imagine that I'm a shade tree and he's just sitting in the shade and he's taking in the stillness. And we talk about everything. So I'm aware that this is having an effect on how he will internalize images and beliefs about later life. And there's research out of Yale University, a psychologist who spent her whole career for decades looking at internalized ageism and how it affects us. And it's absolutely startling what she's found. It affects our physical health and cardiac rate, our mental health, our cognitive health and memory, the quality of our retirement. It affects our will to live. It even affects our longevity. So if you can get kids when they're young to have a positive internalized image of age or old age and carry it through the lifespan to counter all the ageism in the culture, they will have a different experience of their later lives. And that's really potent. It feels like just one small individual thing, but it's actually quite potent. It's the antidote to ageism.
And love and caring.
And love. Yeah.
There isn't enough of that kind of love from a person who has been through a certain extent of life, and they can give in a way that they weren't able to, maybe when they were working or worried about raising their own family, kind of thing, right? Or career.
Well, again, this is very individual, right? So if someone is really enjoys being a grandparent and is free of the obligations of financial insecurity and is free of serious illness and is able to be present, you know, really present and honest and authentic, then there's a quality of love that comes through that person whose heart is open that doesn't come through the senior we were talking about earlier, who's more closed down. We were talking about the person who's more rigid and regretful. That person's heart is more closed down. So there are many qualities of love. And I think the grandparents' role in loving kids is different than the parents' role. The parents are, you know, reinforcing ego development and performance and peer pressure and all the stuff the kids are feeling. The grandparents' love is just different. It's just, it's acceptance by presence. It's more non-judgmental and less controlling. So, you know, there's a beautiful and important role for elders in the culture. We're really missing elders in our culture. We're missing because there's been no guidance and no training and no rite of passage. So people don't really know how to grandparent, and they don't really know how to leave a legacy. And they don't really know how to volunteer in a way that's that really contributes. So it's complicated to be an elder now because of that absence of guidance. And that was what motivated me. You know, after 30 years of working as a psychotherapist, after 72 years of life experience, after 50 years of meditation practice, I just thought, well, I've got something to say about this, so I'm going to give my gift. And it feels like my final gift. It's my sixth book, and it feels like my final gift. And I'm very grateful that I have the opportunity to do that.
Well, I'm grateful you took the opportunity to do that and to share it with us today and our audience, your wisdom and your elderness. You know what? Is there a word for elderness? We need more words.
We do need more words. I mean, some people are using elderhood. Some people use sage. But yeah, the language is, you know, even the word old is charged in our culture. So the language is doesn't have the nuance that I wish that it had.
Well, and for some, elder is also, and it, more than not, it's also attributed to a man. So that's why, as I had known the word growing up, so that's why I love the fact that you use it and you use it well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Connie Zweig, and again, her website, conniezweig.com, conniezweig.com, and once again, the book is The Inner Work of Age, Shifting from Role to Soul. What a pleasure getting to have this conversation with you.
My pleasure. Thank you, Filippo.
All the best to you, and looking forward to hearing more from you as this all progresses.
Thank you.
And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Clarice from Santa Ana. Until all of the lockdowns and craziness going on, I was very social and so enjoyed being with friends and laughing and talking about the good things going on in our lives. And now, not only do my friends stay away, they only want to email and talk on the phone about all the negativity going on in today's world. I miss the good old days, and I want to laugh and have fun and share positive things with the ones I love. However, I must admit that I too am caught up in all the negativity that is online and in social media. I don't want to continue these kinds of conversations, but don't know how to shift as negativity appears to be all that is available. What can I do to not only help myself, but to also assist others in lightening up?
Dear Clarice, thanks for this great question. As so many people are caught up in the day-to-day unhappiness spread through mainstream media and social media, I lovingly suggest that you start your day as I start mine, and that is by researching good news on the internet. There are many sites with positive and inspiring stories and videos. One of the ones I like is goodnewsnetwork.org. In fact, if you simply put good news into your search engine, you will find many positive websites that will provide you with fun things to think and talk about and to focus on. One of my very good friends does this every day, and she sends wonderful emails out to her large circle of friends. And I look for her emails first thing every day. You might want to start doing something similar and send these kinds of emails to your friends and then have conversations about which ones appeal to you the most. Never has it been so important to look for the good and to share good news with our friends and loved ones. And there is so much good news available to us if we're willing to look for it and share it. I also lovingly suggest that you go to lifechangesnetwork.com and check out our archives. We have over 650 shows that are not only fun, they are informative and provide solutions to the situations many are finding themselves in at this time. Sharing the archived shows you enjoy the most is also a great way to start some amazing conversations. Thanks again for this great question. And by following my suggestions, I trust you will find wonderful things to talk about and to share.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
Mm-hmm. And we'll be right back with our musical guests, Suzanne Teng and Gilbert Levy, right after this on the Life Changes Show at Home Edition.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention.
It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to dorothydonahue.com.
The Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, LifeChangesNetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@LifeChangesNetwork.com.
We are back, and our musical guests are instrumentalists and award-winning recording artists and so much more. Their bios go on with so many awards and so many credits, some very exciting ones. We welcome Suzanne Teng and Gilbert Levy on the Life Changes Show once again. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. Thank you.
Great to have you here. And I have to say that just before the show, actually, it's been a busy day, a lot going on, a lot of energy. And I thought, oh, I have 5 minutes. I'm going to sit. What do I want to listen to? And so, of course, I went straight to your music and I closed my eyes and you took me away. Like, actually, the name of your new album that's coming out is Whisper.
Yes, it's Whisper. It's quiet music to invite you in to a nice quiet space, but it has emotional content that's, you know, just a journey, an exploration, but it's quiet and intimate.
Yeah. Well, the two of you, have enjoyed connecting before and again, and our sound check was so much fun because I got to see you on video and one of these days. But in the meantime, you pull out all these instruments. And then when I went to earlier in the week, one of the concerts that you all had just done this September, I'm watching you share the various instruments and how you're not only really good at playing them, but you explain them and you give honor to them and the culture they came with. Where did this love of instrumentation come for both of you, actually? Or instruments?
Oh, wow. Well, for me, I've been playing the flute since I was 10, and it was all classical music until my 20s, and then I discovered world music, and it was just really fun and exciting to explore these different cultures through the instruments. And I had a lot of opportunities to be in incredible settings to play music with wonderful musicians and learn from them. And it's just kind of grown. I've been around a while and it's just grown. It's a passion. It's a love.
And you become the flute queen. Gilbert, how about you?
She's certainly my flute queen. So for me, quickly, I was always attracted to the sound of other drums, like when the Beatles would use tabla. That's the earliest example I can think of. And when I moved to Los Angeles, it's just a cultural, you know, love basket full of influences. So I started studying Indian classical music, and we did a lot of yoga chanting for a while. But really, when we found our thing, it put us into the place where we wanted to be, where we could express ourselves with all these instruments.
Mm. Mm. Well, actually, let's jump in. We'll get to talk a little more after this, but let's jump in because I want to make sure people get to hear. In this first piece, it's going to be an improvisation, and Suzanne is going to be on the bass flute, and Gilbert is going to be on a pan drum called the Rav, R-A-V. Actually, it sounds like you're already set up to play, unless you want to share something about those instruments, or should we just play first?
Yeah, we're ready to play.
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right, well, here we get to hear. So this is, I've learned how they work together. If you haven't figured it out yet, they are in a relationship, and they improvise, and from the improvisation comes, well, you'll hear it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Indeed. Suzanne Tang on the flute and Gilbert Levy on the pan drum, a very particular pan drum. And hopefully he'll tell us about it in just a moment. But before he does, I do want to share that their music is available actually all over Apple Music, Spotify. We have all their links on our website. You could learn more about them at mysticjourney.net. And I have to say that their music, literally hundreds of their recordings have been licensed for film, TV, commercials. It's not all like this, but this really seems to hit the heart of so many. The Whole Lifetime said that they lift the listener to a place where beauty, ecstasy, and tranquility reside. I got it. I felt it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
So what were you playing, Gilbert?
You know, the whole hand pan story is, it's a long and, you know, frightful story from the inventor's point of view, the pan art people, right, who invented the hung. And there's been so many imitators. One of the difficulties with the hung was we couldn't travel with it because it's a very delicate metal instrument. So this Russian drum, it's hammered in a factory. It's heavy metal. It's bulletproof. It's a tank, but it's easy to travel with. And because it's such thick metal, it's got a lot of sustain to it. So the notes will ring for a long time. So that gives us another, it's almost like a piano sometimes. So the distinction, I still prefer the hung because it's, you know, close to my heart. But this Rav Vast, it's called, it certainly has its own voice.
Wow. You have been busy along with your music creation. You've created the CD. It's coming out October 15th of 2021, called Whisper. And what more can you share about it? What do we have to look forward to?
Oh, besides the album, or just, we're just very excited
within
about
the album.
Within the album. The album has 9 tracks, and it's a real, we love it. Like the second track, it's called Sweet Jack, and it was written after our dog passed. We went to the studio and just played our hearts out a couple of days afterwards, and it was just a pure reflection of his joy, his energy, and our love for him and our sadness and losing him. And we were so happy with how it turned out. And all the tracks have their own personalities. One of them is called Watching Us from Other Worlds, which is a line from a poem that our son Miles wrote when he was about 8. And we just love that line. So we've been holding on to that for a title. And we had actually written this piece that went through this evolution of names. And at one point it was Genesis. And then I just said, no, we have to name this one Watching Us from Other Worlds and switch the one that we'd given this title to Genesis. And it's such a far out track. Our guitarist from our band, Mr. Journey, Dan Torres, he's awesome. And he added this really otherworldly ambient guitar track that's just, it just takes you away. And it really feels like there are spirits watching us from other worlds, or whatever your interpretation might be. But it's just one of, we love all the tracks. They're all really pretty special to us.
And it's Gilbert.
It's our first sort of full ensemble album that doesn't have any drums, which was a challenge and kind of a blessing at the same time, because it put us in a different compositional space. So even though I'm a drummer, I'm really pleased with this release because it's special. And it's got lots of rhythm, but no drums.
Oh, that's interesting. In this next piece, I want to talk a little bit before we get into the playing mode, but the African harp that you're going to be playing, it's percussive, right?
It is. It's almost all African music and instruments has a strong element of rhythm, but it's an interesting. It's a primitive instrument, and it uses fish line for strings. But it sounds really good. We've had it for a number of years. It's been featured on a few of our albums. But it's a primitive thing. If I could send you a picture with the white string tied around the gourd with the goat skin on it, it's a very interesting instrument.
Yes, and how do you pronounce it? I know it's N-G-O-N-I, but it's how pronounce N-goni. How?
It's N-goni.
N-goni. N-goni. Yeah, and it's like the bigger relative of the kora, which is more commonly heard. And the thing I wanted to say about this next piece that we're playing, which is also kind of an improvisational jam, is that it's reflective also. You kind of hinted at we go to a lot of different places with our music, and some of our albums are more rhythmic and upbeat. And this piece kind of goes in that direction, sort of. I mean, it's slow, but it's pretty funky, thanks to how Gilbert plays the N'goni. But a couple of the pieces on the album go to this sort of funky place, but in a really slow, kind of meditative way. But it was new for me. I had a lot of fun. I'll just
leave it at that. We're excited about it. I know, and I thank Tess Cacciatore, who's like, "Do you know that Suzanne and Gilbert have a new album coming out?" No, let's hear. So we all got excited, and good on you all. And so this isn't really like going to be something from that, right? This is improvised for right now, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Well, here we get to have Suzanne Teng on the bamboo flute and Gilbert Levy on the N'goni African harp live with an improvisation here on the Life Changes Show. Thank you. Suzanne Tang and Gilbert Levy. Oh, you know, Suzanne, like I said before, with you and Gilbert online, whoever used to play that flute in the past, bamboo, probably never thought it could be ever someday played like that. So good on you for taking it to a different level. Mysticjourney.net is their website, and where the CD will be available, along with, of course, Apple Music and Spotify and Pandora. We have other links on our website. There's a YouTube channel where you could watch Suzanne also dance.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know
right?
that.
In between her musical.
Oh, okay. So, I guess I do.
Yes, yes, it. Yes. Well, yes, I meant like in, while you're on concert, on stage. I enjoyed that too. So what a pleasure to have
deeply
you both.
Because I have a past.
I'm sorry?
Don't search too deeply on the internet because I have a past.
Well, now I have the search. Okay. I'll probably find you playing in New Orleans with Wynton Marsalis and all of that, which I know you've done, and Branford Marsalis. I mean, like, gosh, you two have done such amazing things. And Suzanne on Survivor, you know, so, but I've found it already, if that's what you're talking about. But anyway, once again, thank you both for making this show pretty special and coming back on with us.
Our pleasure. Thanks for having us, Filippo.
Thanks,
great.
Filippo.
Yeah, you're welcome. All the best to you. And that is our show. Wow. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our producer and co-host, Mark Leger, I am Filippo Voltaggio, your host, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.